Voila, let's get started. So welcome everybody, BNP Weekly, episode 128. It is 24th of May, 2021. Yes, I got it right. Woohoo! In the BNP Weekly, we always talk about the latest in the Microsoft 365 platform, the latest news and from Microsoft and the community. And typically, we also have a visitor here as well. My name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a program manager in the Microsoft 365 platform level. And with me as a co-host is Waldek. Who are you?
Good morning, everybody. Good day, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Waldek Mastikas, and I am Cloud Developer Advocate for Microsoft 365. And today with us... No, I wasn't. Yes. It's build week, right? So like, I had a chance to know. today with us, we have a guest from the US, Katie Swanson. Good morning, Katie.
Hi, everyone.
Cool. Katie, you've been in a few of the community calls in the past, but can you kind of do a brief intro? Who are you? What are you doing?
Sure. I am a senior product designer on the SharePoint team. My focus is in customer success. That's for both internal and external users, really just to get them excited about SharePoint.
And what does that mean actually in practice in your case? You're focusing on...
Yeah, sure.
Quite a lot of stuff.
Things. You know, it started out getting people to jump over to modern from prem, so showing them what the new, you know, all the new things. But it has since kind of just grown into this much more holistic approach to helping customers understand what they can and can't do, showing them best practices, working on different kind of strategic partnerships to give them an art of the possible of what their tenant could look like, down to building out toolkits, doing kind of different kind of demos and whatnot. It's kind of all over the place. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Everything related on graphics and design and end user experiences, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now before we continue on that topic, it's actually you mentioned something related on the modern and the whole organization dedicated for design, wasn't it created for modern SharePoint? So we basically didn't have a proper organization before that, or am I completely wrong?
I don't believe we did. I think at least the crew that I'm with have only been this team for the last maybe 4 or 5 years. So don't think that there was really anything before that.
Yeah. And I remember that. I can't remember that there was a dedicated organization for design and end user experience. And of course, there was an individual specialist in individual feature crews and feature teams. But then whenever we came up with the new dawn of SharePoint for SharePoint Online and targeting the modern experiences, that's when the organization was created. How big is the organization, by the way, nowadays?
SharePoint proper, I'm going to guess, estimates probably about 40 plus designers. Spanning across all different kind of everything from all over the place on SharePoint. But we also work with the OneDrive team, and they probably have about the same. So we kind of consider ourselves a studio in a sense. So work between each other.
And it's really, really, I can at least personally say that looking under the SharePoint 2010 or 2013, it wasn't that nice.
Well, I mean, back in the days, it was really innovative, right? I mean, that was we were like, wow, ribbon on the web. And now you're like,
let's get rid of the ribbon.
Well, I mean, we learned a thing or two over the years, right? Yeah. That it might not be the most, how would you say that? User-friendly way of finding features?
Yes.
I don't know, Katie?
Yes, yes. And it freaks out people. I remember actually that I was doing consulting before. Yes, I was still doing consulting for one large fast food restaurant globally, one of the big ones and globally. And they had problems for end users realizing how to provide content in SharePoint because of the ribbon. So basically what we ended up doing is overlay all of the ribbon functionalities and just the text box, and that's it. Because otherwise, the end users would not be able to actually write whatever is requested. So, it's just a good example of it was great technically. It was a really advanced and really cool. But the same happened in Office, right? So the in Office, the ribbon has been simplified because end users freaked out. So,
That's nice to react to customer feedback and be able to kind of iterate on that and see how far we've come. Even just in the last 5 to 10 years, you know, being able to do that very fast and get that, you know, quick feedback from them.
Absolutely, absolutely. How does that work actually within your work? So is the research team part of the design team? Because I know that there's a research team as well. And then how does it actually work? Where do we come up with these ideas? Is somebody just sitting there on Monday morning in their office and like, oh, I have an idea.
Throwing balls at the wall.
Throwing the ball.
You know, when I joined, they were already part of the team. They just have expanded so much since then. But it's baked into the design process. Like, you can't get something out the door without doing a review with them. And honestly, you should have been engaging with them previous to that. You're trying to do, if you can get some A/B testing or even just some background research on what you're designing and who you're designing for, they can totally assist you on that. It's been a fantastic opportunity to just go in and like pick their brain. And they also help to do some, back in the day when we actually saw people in person at conferences.
Wow.
But actually, get people excited about it and get them bring
getting
them
out of the so door.
We can actually do these face-to-face kind of real-time feedback with them. Yeah. So I mean, it's all over the place. But yeah, it gets fed back into, we'll go over all the kind of results. We'll have readouts on it. And it does, it feeds back into our design decisions.
Yeah. So simple example for external people as well, kind of an explaining the process is that somebody comes up with something like right now we're working as an example, the modernization of the SharePoint store, completely end-to-end modernization. There's a team who's doing that. They have a dedicated set of designers who are kind of designing the look and feel that is getting reviewed. And the research team is doing research, interviews with end users and selected MVPs potentially, collecting feedback. And then designers are drawing fancy pictures. And then whenever they have been decided that they
pixels.
Will be...
You can say that.
Yeah, exactly. Pushing pixels, yes. whenever that has been then decided to be moving forward, then the engineering team actually gets those as the, this is how it should be looking like, this is the end user experience, these are the text, these are all of that is basically being laid on the developer team. And then of course there's always a functionalities and areas which are not necessarily taking into account in the design. So before the functionality is getting shipped, there's a design review or experience review. And those are really, how would I put it? They're pretty nasty meetings. Like, no, not really nasty meetings, but in a positive way.
Honest.
It's a good thing, though. It kind of raises the bar.
It is. Yes.
You really have to prep for them because you really, I mean, they're going to hold you accountable for what your assumptions are.
Yeah.
And for better or worse, they do provide a lot of insight into what's going out the door. I know I've been in a couple with you, Vesa, that have been humbling to say the least. it's still good. You know, we still get to go through those with them. But, you know, I think we're also missing the fact that even when something goes out the door, we have all the different times that we come back, you know, like you're saying, production and then goes out to GA and everything. But in between, we still are iterating and testing things with research and coming back and still fixing it. So they're involved throughout the entire life cycle.
Yeah.
And is that so at which stage come things like making it accessible, like thinking about the contrast, thinking about like how people will work with it with a keyboard or another device?
So I hear my Ben Truelove, who's like our accessibility guru, in the back of my, like on my shoulder saying, right at the front, we think about that, right? Absolutely. You know, thankfully, there's some really good tools that we have now and resources where we do really keep ourselves accountable for that. I'm not going to say it's right off the bat because you still are kind of going through a lot of the wireframing and kind of thinking throughout the whole, you know, experience, but you do before you actually get it over to engineering with your red lines, you also owe accessibility red lines. So you have to go through all of that. And there is an accessibility review that you should be going through as well.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it is a pretty, let's say, strict process nowadays, but it is a good thing, considering
Absolutely.
In the past we had really weird differences with the experiences or even admin experiences were like, wow, how is this looking like this? And the other one looks like something else. So it's driving that consistency, reusability of the code as well, and reusability of the designs. So it's familiar for the people. So, and obviously, it's not just the experience review, and then whenever before we ship a feature, there's also so-called red room and all of that stuff, which is basically double checking that do we have docs, do we have readiness, do we have all of that in adequate level, and then green light, okay, now we can actually ship. So it's a quite interesting process actually. So
And is there also, I don't know, call it a board or a group of folks who ensure that whatever new feature is being designed, that it's consistent with everything else that is already there? Because SharePoint is a big place, right? There are so many experiences across the board. So is there somebody that does the alignment or checks alignment?
So I'm going to say it's a team's accountability and the designer. So really, to be honest, the SharePoint design team proper that does, well, just say for auth and reign specific, is not that big. We have about a dozen people right now. And as we're doing different kind of features, we do team crit. And then we also do at that level. And then we go up to the whole design team proper crit. So you actually have to go through that. So you have many eyes on it that can call out, hey, that's very similar to X. We should probably align it or what have you. We also have right now are starting to build Figma toolkits that help to streamline our design process so that we can reuse all the different kind of functionalities, keep things, those consistencies across the UI and experience, where we didn't really have those for the last 5 years. We're getting much more nimble about it. So yeah. There's not necessarily a core UX team that works directly on these assets. We would love that, but right now we're all that team. So
yeah. Now one of the things what you also worked on is the modern design. So you've been kind of doing a lot of, let's say, designing of example portals, right? So for example, you are the person behind the lookbook portal designs, correct?
Guilty. Yeah. I actually was indirectly started that because I had just started. I was actually a contractor at the time. And Denise Tribona, my manager, came back from Ignite and had said, hey, there's a customer that really loved what we did. I had designed all the demos for the different kind of talks that were being presented. And there was really no like rhyme or reason behind it. It was really around their narrative. But those turned into these sites that then we shared out differently, but then kind of grew into this amazing thing called the lookbook with the magic of PMP behind it. Really brought that magic to life and kind of exploded into this amazing opportunity. So, you know, yeah, I think it's been really fun. Like I said, it's one of those things that you're working with. I got to work with our core team to figure out those narratives and actually kind of work within the product. I never worked in modern before starting here. So kind of coming up with what does each web part do? What's the best way to kind of utilize this to get, you know, what the experience is? And those kind of just turned into me just really working on different kind of things across portals to home sites, to different communication sites, hubs, team sites, whatnot. So yeah.
Yeah. And now the same templates are part gradually getting included in the product even. So now that we're getting the site templates actually natively within the product, some of the templates in Lookbook are kind of graduating to be part of the product, and some will keep will keep on hosting in the Lookbook. So
yeah, and what was just me, my single, you know, solo me, is now turned into a team that we're building out of Suzhou. So to be able to support the template growth. So yeah, what started as one fun project kind of blew up real fast. So, well, I say real fast. What has it been, about 2 years? That's all kind of, in tech world, 2 years is pretty fast.
Yeah, true.
Another thing that I wanted to ask is, like, in the past, I've built a lot of internet sites on SharePoint. And as everybody in the world, the last thing
I don't know if Katie
even
knew about this one. Me and Wilde come from the age when the SharePoint was used for .com sites. So
yeah. And like you can imagine, the last thing you want to do is your internet site for your company to look like SharePoint, right?
Yeah.
You don't, right? So like we ended up trying to implement the wildest dreams of designers and marketing people in SharePoint. So I wonder, like, to what point when designing experiences for modern and demos, like you try to push the ball like beyond the limits?
Oh gosh, I think the first thing, which was really small, was using GIFs in the background of items to kind of show like movement. We still don't have that. Well, working on it, but we didn't have the capability of doing some video content in the background. So that was like the first, oh wow, you can do this moment. Outside of that, it was really kind of pushing the boundaries of what you could do with embed to bring a different kind of content. But also being able to kind of play with the theming and like bring that color in a certain kind of way, utilizing different kind of imagery or what have you. I mean, yeah, SharePoint's still going to have the limitations. It's not, you know, HTML. You can't do all the things with the fancy JavaScripts and stuff. Out of the box. So I'm going to say out of the box, we don't offer that. But there are still a lot of good things that you can kind of play with it and kind of push that boundaries.
Yeah. Is it actually restricting you as a designer? Is it, or are you kind of a, or if you put yourself on a customer side, do you understand that some are saying that, but I can't do X and Y and Z, why I can't?
Or, I think at the end of the day, it depends on why you need to do it. Like if there is a real good rationale of what you're trying to accomplish in a section or in the content itself, the delivery, I mean, I'm not going out there, I'm going to say this as a designer, I'm not going to make it pretty and fancy just to make it pretty and fancy. I need to do that to solve a problem. So there are some, I try and work within the boundaries of what we have today to see if I could do that. And then there's moments where people will say, hey, can we do whatever the feature is that we don't have? Yeah, we could, but if you want to keep it out of the box and not have to do customization, what about this? You know, so it's kind of a give and take. And then we push those thoughts and ideas into our product space to say, hey guys, we should probably build this.
Yeah, exactly. You're basically pushing the limits of the product, so which will then push the feature crew to implement new functionalities, which is a good thing. So really, really good. Now, coming back on brief a few step backs related on the lookbook. So what's your vision around the future of the lookbook now that we're getting templates graduating on the product?
I think the lookbook, I would love to kind of expand it and create a resource for design guidance and resources, but I don't want to limit it to just SharePoint. I mean, eventually I'd love to see kind of templates for maybe Teams come in there, different kind. I know that's been a conversation. I mean, ideally I've been love to get out a new design guidance site and connect the two that would have those tips and tricks, you know, and different kind of things to make your sites beautiful. You know, we gave you these templates, but it doesn't tell you the how. Right. It just kind of gives you a good starting point. So those are the kind of things I want to focus on, is getting that kind of teaching moment out there. So eventually, if that can expand, that's what my goal is.
Yeah. And right now, the intention is not to kill the lookbook, even though we're getting some of the templates in the product. And there's even some functionalities which are much more efficient for now, at least in the lookbook, than in the product upcoming, the first version of the product templates. But again, it's a journey. One step at a time, there will be a better capabilities and features. Now, coming back on your historical things, how did you end up being a designer? What did you do before coming to Microsoft?
My past life, I was actually a food service director. My first degree was in business administration. I actually was working at a community college in right outside of Detroit, Michigan. 2008 was probably the most fulfilling year of my life in hindsight, because I actually, I was laid off. I was in the weird predicament that I was the only person in a school doing the cafe catering. And so my company laid me off. And it was that moment of, well, do I continue to do this? Or do I want to go into what I really want to do? Because while I was working there, I was making all the menu boards and coming up with all the different kind of flyers and doing this stuff and kind of knowing that I wanted to do design. And that's what I did. I actually went back to school. Bit the bullet and just went back to school. I went to take some classes at a community college, a technical college rather, trying to get my feet wet in design, thinking I was going to do package design. I went graphic design, all this stuff. And then somewhere along the way, I just realized that I should probably do web design. And this is back when Flash was a thing, right? That was kind of awesome. Nice. And I was like, oh, I don't want this whole coding thing. And all I want to do is make these awesome, you know, designs and have you. And yeah, I kind of turned myself into this designer in the space of like product, because I actually went on my first internship was with Groupon. And I didn't even know that was such a thing. I was there as a visual design intern. And I just remember leaving out of there going, this is what I want to do. This is it. This is what I want to do with my life. So changed it up, added some interaction design to my degree, and here I am today.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Past life, it's crazy.
Yeah, you almost ended up doing something else. See, but you made the right choice. It's just a matter of making that and making the U-turn if needed, which is a super important thing as well. So,
yeah,
I almost got to be a manager in a small casino. So, go figure. So.
Well, there you go.
Always bets, right? Like betting money, yes. Betting tech.
Yes.
Always a bet.
Never too late.
Yeah, I think I would have got highly frustrated on repeating the same work. So it's completely different. Anyway, so that's a different roles and different discussions. Now, if there would be other people who would be highly interested in getting the KDIS job on KDIS position, how would they get to be a KD?
Oh,
well, obviously they wouldn't get your
you
position.
You have to have an amazing personality. Duh. You just have to have the passion. I think, you know, nowadays, yeah, schooling's important. Go learn the basics. But that doesn't necessarily mean college. That means go out and, you know, the internet has amazing, you know, tutorials and everything out there. Just go out and learn, really. Put yourself to it. And, you know, I could go on for days on this one. We could have a whole nother topic on it. But just I think the passion part of it is there. And don't be afraid to start over. And also, if you're ever looking into a Microsoft position, we are hiring and we do have available positions on our team. But a good option too, don't feel like you have to go full time. Come in as a contractor. See if you like it. Get your feet wet. That's what I did.
And there you are. So as a senior designer in the team. So that's really cool.
It took 6 months for them to swap me over, but that's okay.
Well, your work perspective, you get to do what you really like to do. Now, related on that one, actually, then there's the fear of actually when you get committed really on the work and that you have the massive passion. Do you get to work too much as well and too many commitments and things?
Well, I am the only designer in customer success. So for quite some time, 2 years, it's in my blood to kind of just work hard. And I think there's a point where burnout happens and you can love it too much. But thankfully, now I'm getting to the point where, you know, I've started to ask for help. That's probably the hardest thing. But and now I have some vendors that could come support me. But of course. I think
amazingly, you got some help when you asked some help. That's the first step, right? So
crazy. I thought it was going to be a failure moment for me saying I can't do all of this, and it was actually a really good thing to do. Yeah. So it's a growth opportunity for me.
And for anybody actually. So in general, of course, but it's one of those things which we need to, and I'm having a problem with that as well, because it's just a matter of, I can take care of it. I can take care of that. That's not the problem.
And then you end up like, it's too much. It's too much.
Exactly.
There's another word besides yes. I don't understand.
Exactly.
Yes, I will. By when do you need that?
Sure. Absolutely. Sure. But make it happen.
Another thing related to that I wanted to ask is, Katie, do you feel pressure from designing a product that is being used by millions every day? Or is it like, it's okay?
I have these moments. Yes, I still have these moments, and I hope it never goes away. I call it like the Pinocchio effect, that when I see something I've done and I see it out in the wild, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's real. Like, that's really out there. That's crazy.
I did that.
Well, for instance, I was working on my Connect for this last quarter, and I actually looked something up on the lookbook, and it's amazing to me how many people out there reference it in different kind of blogs or different kind of things. And it's like, those are the graphics I made. And it's so great to see other people, you know, utilizing that. So those are the moments that I really enjoy. The product piece of it's still like this weird reality of like, I guess that's kind of what I do. That's weird. Yeah, people are using this. Okay, that to me is the more weird part.
I was waiting to answer on, I never thought about it. Oh my God, no.
Like, oh, no crap.
Should be said though, I am a product designer, and I like to preface this usually is that I don't actually design product. I use the product to design. Like, that's kind of the flip of my position. I understand the product, but I don't actually build the features and do all those things. I work with those teams, but I actually use the product to really showcase what it can do. So if that makes some clarification on it.
Yeah, but still, it's you're still millions and millions of people are using things which you designed, and we're using the in the Jeff keynote here and there. We're doing demos on an environment which you designed, so it's pretty cool.
I think it just hit me. Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, and I guess like for every single site that you see being used by you or that was designed exactly by you, there are probably 10 others that were inspired by your work.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's so great. Great to hear.
Okay.
No big deal.
Monday morning. Concentrate.
Nothing to see here. Move on.
Now let's talk about something else actually. And one of the big things obviously inside of our organization as well is the diversity and making sure that everybody feels welcome in the day-to-day work, but also in the community side of the things. And you're actually leading some of the efforts internally. Can you talk about that slightly?
Yeah, I'm actually on a couple different teams. Right now I'm a VT member of the ODSP Glean chapter. I work on the communications and PR part of it, really trying to get people excited about what we do and get that out there. But I'm also a member of the ODSP D&I Council, which is OneDrive, SharePoint, and Teams collectively that gets together and speaks about how can we support each other, not just individually, but our teams as well, and how we can do different things, how things are going, and kind of work through those. And I'm also part of our Fix Hack Learn D team. But yeah, I think it's important to have the diversity and inclusion within our team because it really does provide a lot of different opinions and background and knowledge to the table. And it's really fantastic that, you know, our top down, we're supported for that.
Yeah. Well, I think there has been a more and more focus on those areas within the past years, which is absolutely great. Yeah. Now, related on that one, you're also kind of a woman in an IT. Would you have any tips for anybody who's looking into heading? Obviously, design is a slightly different kind of an area, but not really.
Yeah.
So any tips for anybody who's growing in to be a woman in IT?
Just don't be afraid. You know, there's actually, in my experience, I never went into it thinking that I couldn't do it because I was a woman. I went into it because I, you know, thought that I could do it because I was a woman, you know, that I'm just who I am. Like I never kind of put those boundaries up. I think of anybody that wants to go out there, you have to look at it. Is this something you want to do? Then go do it. You know, there's so many opportunities out there and so many great companies that don't reference who you are, your pronouns, it's your talent that they're looking for. So I think, you know, kind of putting that aside, that means you're a woman or whatever your, you know, self-identification is. Just come into it with a passion.
Absolutely. And then, well, one thing what has come up with a related on this topic with other ones and other discussions is really and then finding the right people to you can actually hang with and work with and you can actually support you on this journey as well. Regardless of how do you identify yourself, it doesn't really matter. Is it me or somebody else? When you're growing up, you always need to have somebody who is actually supporting on the journey and trying to make those connections. And working remotely, obviously, making those connections is a bit hard. Or harder, but that's also one of the reasons why we have the community. We have different ways of connecting with people, even though most of us are still stuck at home. So, we'll get to the office at some point.
Yeah, you know, like it's Microsoft or even Daniel speaks specifically to OneDrive, SharePoint. We have women's circle groups that are mentoring groups. You can actually reach out. They're probably the most active that groups I've been a part of. And they really don't be afraid to, you know, search out people that you really respect or admire and ask them, hey, can I have a coffee with you? 5 minutes, 15 minutes. Yep. It's not going to be like mentorships is a big thing. But if you just have a couple questions to pick their brain, that opens you up to a lot of opportunities as well.
Yep, absolutely. And that's actually interesting. At least in Microsoft, it's always been like if you ping somebody and there's a suitable time zone or time frame, it's always like, yeah, absolutely, I can help. The only challenge is that if there's too many people asking over a question, it gets overwhelmed. Yeah. But as a rule of a thumb, people are never negative on helping. It's just a matter of having the courage to ask. And that way, even I still remember even when Waldeck was applying his job, sorry for putting you on the spot, but pinging people and asking, hey, so what if I would be asking, actually applying, and what would I be, how do I approach that and all of that stuff. Those things, they have a big impact. So,
yep.
Well, and people are always willing to help. That's the beauty of at least what I've seen inside of our company, even though external people are asking for help. So, see, Waldeck, you were external people. Not just kidding. Just
I was.
No, I think everybody is part of the community. That's the really good thing about, and the beautiful thing about nowadays, how the system actually works. Now, should we do some articles quickly, and then we'll come back on the discussion? So let's do the latest news. We don't actually have that much news within the last week, which is kind of understandable.
Surprise, why?
Build is happening this week. So when you're watching this or listening this for the first time, depending on when you're doing that, but on Tuesday, 25th of May, and the build announcements will go live. And so there will be a lot of new announcements on things. This recording went live on 25th of May, 2021, depending on when you're watching it. Might be 2030. So,
yes.
Now, few articles from Microsoft: rebrand apps to your own organization branding with app customization in Teams. So this is basically you were looking into this, Waldeck, right? And do you want to do a quick intro and clarification?
Yeah, so in Teams, developers, when they build apps, they will be able to expose few options to people who use the app and install the app to basically adjust it to their needs. And you'll be able to change things like colors, links, maybe the display name, I think, too. Right, so that gives you the ability to pick an app that is generic and then adjust it to your company's needs.
So here, as an example, we are rebranding that based on that logo and then new settings.
Yeah, and I think that there is the title, short description, long description, icon, colors.
So, and that's the new setting of that one. So depending on a design of the application, so the ISV who's actually creating this can decide what are those settings which can be override. Of course, you can't just rebrand anything in the store because that wouldn't make any sense. But cool feature, for sure, absolutely. And making the quite often actually this specific ISV solution getting personalized based on the company. So this is how you can do that. Now, then we had a good new blog post from Melissa related on best practices for using global navigation in SharePoint app bar. I think, Katie, you've been partly involved on, well, at least involved partly in this discussion. Am I completely wrong?
I designed the landing behind it, and I was involved in the initial demo of this. I helped them build out. I've been part of it, but I'm not actually on the feature team.
On that part, absolutely. But this is a good story related on recommendations and thinking points when you are defining your information architecture and the hubs and all of that stuff. So what will be visible where, how does it actually work, and how is it exposing information? So, and Melissa is the mother of hubs, but also mother of the global navigation. So I think Melissa is widely referred as the mother of hubs. So, and this is from the Microsoft 365 developer blog, publishing your apps to Microsoft Teams Store. So basically the publishing process, talking about that one, how do you publish, what are the policies, what are the things getting resolved, just to recap how it's being done. It's a great opportunity for reaching tens of millions of, hundreds of millions of 145 million daily active users, which is a pretty big number, for then exposing the solution into Teams. And it is clearly growing. I can see, I remember it correctly. So, and the usage of Teams platform is growing significantly as well. So, and more we're also seeing this kind of a nice merger with ODSP being OneDrive, SharePoint, and Teams to a one unified, super cool platform. So it's getting to a really, really cool level. And then you have the Graph API surfacing all of that. Now, this one announcing new file components, MSAL2 provider, SharePoint framework, library for Microsoft Graph Toolkit. So Microsoft Graph Toolkit v2.2, wasn't it?
Correct.
Yes. It doesn't actually say that. Interesting. Anyway, version 2.2, if I remember correctly, but thank you for confirming that. Controls, which are then connecting to OneDrive and SharePoint sites for surfacing files and documents and making that look and feel automatic. So you can just put that one on your solution and voila, you have a connection to the files, which is really, really cool. And additional thing as well, like MSAL, authentication provider, SharePoint framework library for Craft Toolkit. This is making the connectivity for SharePoint web parts to Craft work more efficiently. And by the way, Waldeck, this one had now been fixed related on the multi-instance, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
So there was a in the beta timeframe, there was a problem related on multiple web parts having the same SharePoint framework library connection to Craft Toolkit. So that's all fixed. From the developer blog side, Microsoft 365 PMP Community Spotlight Carry Trinder, a good story on that one. So we're going to release a weekly spotlights of different community members. Luis Rieses is leading that one. Then we had a blog post related on, do you need Ngrok to develop Microsoft Teams app with the Bob? Bob seems to be terrified based on the on his face.
I was going to say, you're a good spot right there.
Yes. It seems to be the recommended way of having always a face in the YouTube. So. That's a good face. But basically, a good story related on that one. So the blog post is kind of a supplementary on top of the video explaining the same thing. So you can use it either way. So even read the blog, check the video. Excel scripts and cloud flows, data manipulation, Damien Bird. We actually went this through last week, now that I remember, because we had a chat with Damien on this one. But hey, no harm, repeats, good article. And there's a nice demo related on that one as well. And I think he did a demo in the Office Add-in community call pretty recently, which we'll link into this notes as well. So good stuff related on Office scripts integration. H2O UI launched. I don't think we covered this, or maybe we did cover this, but let's make sure that people remember this. So this is something which actually is related on KDE's work. Now, there is a Stefan Bauer is a really, 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 really talented person in HTML and CSS, and he has provided a alternative set of CSS controls and HTML, which will help on making the UX to look like a fluent UX. So making sure that the file size, for example, is as small as possible. So really, really optimized from a technology perspective, but still aligning on the fluent UX design models. So making sure that everything looks consistent. So have a look on that one. And that's from Stefan Bauer. Find power automate flows that are connected to your sites or lists, basically using CLI Microsoft 365 to scan those instances. So there's a nice script available there and from Appy. Oh, that's the pronunciation for it. Okay, I would have failed. Yes. That's his heart. But good reference on that. Whenever you need that kind of a script, it is now available from Albert. Then there's April Dunham has two videos. So Power Apps Validation and JSON Parsing with Regex. Nice video on that one. And then another video, Power Automate SharePoint Gets Column Changes. I think this is a video. This is actually a blog post. No, it is a video. Okay. So she's doing always a blog post and a video, concentrating on things. She's a cloud advocate around the Power Automate or Power Platform. So good clarifications on those. Cameron Trier, problem restricting SharePoint people column to specific group. So basically a challenge related on that and a clarification how to make things work. So basically targeting different settings and all of that stuff. Nice blog post on finding a problem and then providing a solution for it. So good stories. You had two blog posts on Waldeck last week. Correct. This is really, really new from today. See?
Today, yes, absolutely.
Pre-consent multiple scopes with Microsoft Graph Toolkit. What does that mean? You have to explain.
So when you use Microsoft Graph Toolkit in your app, like for example, imagine that you want to build an app that shows your upcoming events that you have in calendar, right? So MGT will load it with a single line of HTML. But for that, it will need access to your events, attendees. For them, it will, like if you hover over a person, it will also show their files if you have the access to that, their emails and whatnot.
Yeah.
And typically the way it works is that you will get this incremental consent, like asking one permission or two at a time, because that's the way it's recommended to work in AAD,
I mean, like, however, and then you get
exactly
one, exactly. And that gets really annoying.
It will load and additional. I know you heard it. There's a storm here. So, right. So it will prompt you that because it will load the data in chunks.
Yeah.
That is great. So that is the recommended way to build your apps. But in this case, you probably don't want to have like four dialogues or five in a row, but you want to compress them into one. So there is a way in MGT that you can list all the scopes that you want to request up front, and you will get them in single dialogue, one approval, and then at least the first experience of the app will work in single go. Now imagine that you have still another part of your app that, for example, allows you to see your emails, and that is an optional part of the app. Then for that part, when the user arrives there, you will get incremental prompt if you want to, right? Because like that is the whole idea, that you don't ask more permissions that you actually need upfront.
From my end user perspective, this might be actually pretty horrible getting this. I can see Katie nodding when exactly. So from an end user perspective, so from a security perspective, asking the less is always good. But then from an end user perspective, having like another prompt and another prompt, you click a tab and another prompt. It's like, come on, I just want to. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Like imagine you go to a hospital, right? They ask you, okay, your name. And then go down. Oh, yeah. And by the way, is it okay for us to ask your birthday? Because we need to have to. And then they go now. Oh, yeah. Your insurance. Can we ask that too? And there's like, yeah. Keep asking. Like, no. Just like, give me the form. I'll fill it in. I'll get my consent once for the whole
thing. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But the less grants is always good from a security perspective. It's an interesting, actually, dilemma. The balancing between security and the end user experiences and technology. It's really, really interesting, of course,
it is.
Balance. And we've been internally having interesting discussions every now and then. It's like, Katie is asking something to happen. And it's like, no, we can't. It's just, it doesn't, we can't
like,
make
why?
It work.
Why? Make it happen, right? Yeah. Make it happen.
Like in the lookbook, I remember in the lookbook service, we wanted to have a template which has the Yammer web parts in them associated directly to the right group and all of that. But it's like, yeah, theoretically, yes. But in practice, can't happen. It's just code doesn't exist. The APIs doesn't exist. And it's just, it's an interesting balance. Now, you had another blog post from last week as well, the right way of publishing SharePoint framework library packages. Quick recap.
TLDR is that you need to include the dist folder in the package. By default, it is excluded.
And why?
I don't know. You built it.
So why do you need to include it? Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Because otherwise, it will not. So the whole idea is that you build a library to centralize the code you ship so that you don't pull it in. If you don't include the dist, you will pull it in. So that dist is really a fundamental thing for it to work and act as a library. Yes.
Okay, maybe I will need to get back on this one. Let's see if we can get it fixed for next week. So now on the other videos, Paula had a new video related to Microsoft Toolkit agenda component. It's been craft pretty recently. Well, also craft is super important on the platform for sure for accessing the information. On the recording 365, this one was really cool. Pro tips, what to do when you don't feel hurt at work. And this is a discussion basically with three normal people in this show, which is really good. Three normal.
That came across very well.
That went really well. So the typical crew within
this. It actually looks like it's a really good article, though, because some really good insight on how to deal with that.
Exactly. Exactly. So basically, softer side of the discussion, not just technology. And super important topics as well. So.
Yeah.
And then the last one was from Joanna Klein. So Microsoft 365 fiscal year retention. She's been focusing on the retention quite a lot and new additional articles coming. But basically, how things work and what if you need to retain financial reports based on the fiscal year rather than the calendar year, because, well, that can happen. Like in Microsoft, it's two different years, and there will be new blog posts written as well. So that's coming soon. Good, really good stuff as well. But cool, let's get back on the videos discussion. That's the updates on the articles. Nothing too much, not actually, but everybody's waiting for the build announcements to happen on Tuesday morning. So what's happening this week? What are you doing, Katie? Anything interesting on the design pipeline? What you can talk about? Nothing under NDA. So.
I think I can talk about this because I've actually alluded to this in Twitter, but I'm actually just recently onboarded a vendor. We're going to be heads down working on some toolkits. Building out a SharePoint toolkit in Figma, possibly even looking at doing like a basic one in PowerPoint for those that don't know Figma. Won't be as robust, but we'll see. And, you know, kind of getting prepped for that. I feel like there's so many other things, but that's probably the biggest one that I would love to share with people. We heard you. We needed it just as much as you do. So, yeah. Yes.
But I would have needed it before already. Yes, we know, but at least it's coming. So,
yeah.
Anyway, anything?
Some of us didn't have it on this site either. So it's one of those things, it's just time. We haven't been on collectively now. Well, we have been for about at least collectively for almost a year. So it's been pulling everything in from different resources over the past 5 years to make one big thing. So it's a lot of work.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Looking forward on that one. And there's definitely demand for that one externally as well. What about you, Waldek? Anything
absolutely
interesting? Build?
Build, yeah. I think I have three sessions, one with you together. We're going to talk about Omunity,
really?
Right? Yes, I think so. So there is one.
No, we do. So I think that, so on that particular topic, maybe we should actually talk about it as briefly. We do have a table talk on, is it on Thursday? It's on Thursday.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for confirming
depending
that.
Where in the world you are, I think.
That is, by the way, absolutely true.
IDA
so,
Australia.
Basic idea is to have a table talk on how can we improve our community model and getting the feedback and input from the other side rather than us dictating anything. We'll show where we are, what are we planning to do for first 10 minutes, but hopefully then we'll have an interactive discussion with people who are joining. So.
Correct. And then next to it, I also have a talk about one of our learning path for Microsoft Graph Toolkit, and then another one is Student Zone, also about MGT.
Yep. Cool. Cool. On top of that, I have two other table talks. I have like five different one-to-one consultations and then on-demand video. So I will be pretty busy this week. And then I'm going to take Friday off this week as a well-being day.
Good for you.
Just another week for you, Mesa.
Well, yeah, that's true.
What,
and the community volunteers.
Sessions. Slacking, right? Yes. You're slacking now.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. I'm checking every now and then. Also, we're using Facebook. I haven't actually. It seems to be a theme on people getting away from Facebook. But hey, I like the memories and everything. And it's interesting to see the spring memory time zone. When we right now 3 years ago, 3 years ago, there was an SPC 2018, and then seeing that always the craziness goes to this end of May, and then it relaxes. Then the summer comes. But it's just it doesn't matter are we remote or not. But it's still this moment, this week's when it's like super, super crazy. So anyway, hopefully by end of when is it? It's later this year. We are expecting to have a real physical conferences in Orlando. Oh, the Orlando in June is already a hybrid one. I think it is.
Orlando in June? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Which one?
The collaboration, the XSP, the SharePoint conference, which is now including Teams and everything. But it's I can't remember what name it's collaboration.
I think there. Mark Cashman actually put out a blog that had a link out to all the upcoming conferences too.
Yeah.
Don't know the link, but I know that there's one out there that he did.
Yep. Well, anyway, collect the links which we're mentioning on the notes. But I think that's it for this one. So thank you, Katie. Any last words? I just want to make sure that we'll give you chance to talk.
Like, oh, last famous last words. No. No, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for joining. And thank you for, you're really, really busy. So thank you for taking the 1 hour to have a discussion with us. So really awesome. And thank you for those who are watching or listening. And we'll come back with a BNB Weekly within a week. Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.